save some quotes for us after we were chatting.
Congratulations.
Thanks, Andy.
Yeah, happy with the medals that you've got?
Yeah, I think, you know, I think you've got to be happy with winning medals in half of your opportunities. You know, if we won medals in half of our opportunities in every sport, we'd be doing incredibly well, wouldn't we? Although, having said that, we are doing incredibly well as a team across sport. To be third on the medal table is incredible. So, yeah, we 5 out of 10 is a good effort. We've exceeded our target of 4. And so we've got to be absolutely happy with that. And hopefully that will help secure funding for the next 4-year cycle, which is important both for the Olympic programme but also for our junior and youth programmes. So we're very happy with that. I think, you know, being realistic, we're also conscious that, you know, the results could have been better. That, you know, we had 2 gold medal opportunities today. We had Ian and Bart with gold medal opportunity in the Star the other day, so it could quite easily have been 4. We felt that we were a bit unfortunate in the match racing. We believed the result in the second match of the quarterfinals should have gone the other way. But that didn't go in our favour. So, and we think that if Lucianne and Kate got to the semis, then they would have been a very good shot of the title there as well. So we're conscious of all of those things. But we knew that all of those sort of things were going to come, you know, all of those factors would come into the event. And that's why you'll remember back 2 weeks ago now, when you asked about medal targets, I said, yeah, I thought medal form was a realistic target, and that, you know, that in my view, anybody that's able to convert 50% of their realistic medal targets is doing fairly well. And I think we've done that. So, you know, we knew that somebody would get injured. It was, you know, we didn't know who, but the statistics show that that's going to happen. We knew that somebody wouldn't sail well on the day. We knew that there'd be, you know, a judgment that would go against us, all of those sort of things. That's just the nature of sport. I think the only difference between that, for example, this time and 4 years or 8 years ago, is, as you've seen, the level of competition amongst the top teams just is getting tougher and tougher. 14 different nations having won medals here so far. Only Australia having won any more than 1 gold so far, with only 1 event remaining. You know, and those guys, the Australians, you know, have done a fantastic job. They've focused a lot of attention on the 3, particularly the 3 favourite boats in the 49er, the Laser and the 470 men, and they've managed to deliver those. But it was pretty tight for them in the 470. Could have easily have gone the other way. And we were on, you know, it was a bit unfortunate for us that Paul got injured right on race 1, and really, I don't think, you know, we weren't able to see the best of him, particularly as he felt that he was in a strong position to be able to challenge Tom. So they've had a great event. But as I say, as you've seen, medals changing in virtually every class right on that final medal race just shows how healthy the sport is and how competitive it is at the top end, and that you just can never take anything for granted.
If it's that competitive, if it's that competitive, does it give you particular satisfaction that you've got in every class a boat in the top 8, is it? Or
yeah, I think
it could be.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think you have to be there if you want to be winning, you know, 4 or more medals. You need to be realistic. As I say, we could have easily been talking about 4 golds and 1 silver, or 5 golds and 1 silver, or even more than that. And when you look at some of the other big teams, I mean, if you look at, for example, the US, as I'm sure you know, have had what they would describe as a shocking event. And as you say, you know, you're struggling to find the number of sailors they've even got in the top 8. The French, I don't think they've won 1 bronze medal. You know, big sailing nations that have, you know, have just not managed to deliver on this particular event. And I don't think that that's because their campaigns have been particularly poor. I think the US, for example, would say that their campaign's probably been, as a team, has probably been better than it's been for a number of years. But the margins are small, and if you don't, you make 1 or 2 errors and you're not able to come back strongly, then it just slips away incredibly quickly.
It looks like you may have some sailors retiring. So what's coming behind them, or other?
Yeah, but we may have some sailors retiring, but some of them may be getting retired by virtue of the fact that the events are changing. So we've got 3 new events for 2016, women's skiff, a mixed multi-hull, and the kite surfing. So the Elliott match racing will go, the windsurfing will go, and the Star keelboat will go. We know it's going to be a light wind event, in Rio. It's, as we see, games upon games in pretty much every sport. The levels of fitness and athleticism that are required continue to increase, which therefore, of course, suggests that, you know, the, as you get older, it becomes harder and harder to be competitive. So as you suggest, there's a likelihood that the sort of average age of the team will be getting, going down rather than increasing. But I wouldn't write anybody off at this stage. But that's one of the great things about, I think, about a performance, you know, this week, that we've seen today, for example, the 2 of 4 70 teams, you know, three out of the four of them first-time Olympians delivering medals. And, you know, with that and with the new events coming forward, that bodes well for the future. And we've also just come off the back of a very strong World Youth Championships, where we were the top nation at the World Youth Championships just a month ago in Ireland. So our youth and junior program continues to pump talent into the bottom end of our development squads, and so we've just got to keep working to bring that through. And I think we've got a good pipeline, a good process for doing that. And so I'm very sure that by the time, you know, 12 months time, we'll be battling out the top end of those new three events, as well as maintaining our position in the others. And of course, the aim now is to get there and to dominate those classes all the way through to 2016.
And will you be staying to Rio?
Certainly, we're planning on the Rio cycle at the moment, you know, we'll go back and continue the discussions about how we're going to put together the whole process, and who's going to be involved in the team. Part of that, of course, relates to what we do, we get in terms of a funding award from UK Sport, and of course in terms of renewing or replacing any of our commercial partners. But hopefully, on the basis that we have exceeded our target and we have medalled in half of our events, and we have been gold medal competitive in all of those events, then both from a UK Sport perspective and a commercial partner perspective, they'll feel that we've delivered against our targets, and we would hope that we'll, you know, we would get reasonable support moving forward.
Hannah in particular looked pretty gutted by what happened at the end there. Is that she's just told us that she and Sass are going to team up again for Brazil. Obviously she's a serious winner. She doesn't like coming second. That's what you know, words do you have to say for her and their performance?
I think that you know, to come into your first games, particularly on what was a relatively short campaign as a first-time Olympian, to come away with a silver medal is fantastic. You know, Britain's first women's medal in the 470. It's a great achievement. You know, she's got a huge amount of talent and flair, and has got a very good chance of winning the gold medal in Rio. I think that, you know, just a measure of the commitment, the drive, and the expectation within the team that, you know, that you go in desperate to win that gold medal, and anything less than that initially appears and feels like a bit of failure. And I think if you were watching the television feed, you probably saw that, you know, heads down, and it took 5 or 10 minutes until they actually spoke to you and said, look, hey, we've just won a silver medal. We've won the first women's 470 medal for this country's ever had at, you know, your first games, and we've still got plenty of life left in us yet. And suddenly they were able to realize that, and hopefully over the next hours and days that will really begin to hit home. But do you know what, I wouldn't want them to be anything other than initially disappointed that they hadn't won gold, because otherwise they just don't want it enough. You know, we want people to be gutted that they've not won gold, because that's what they've got to strive, and they've got to believe that they're good enough. And they've got the talents and the support in place to be able to achieve that. And if they don't have that, then they haven't got hope in hell of winning gold medal, in my view. So it's that, I think, is just the natural reaction. But they should be very proud of their achievements.
How does the pressure on you and your role compare with this home games compared with previous overseas games?
I think that it's been interesting, particularly because there's you know, with being the top nation for the last few games, and also all the other countries and ISAF and LOCOG being conscious that we are medal competitive in every event, there was a lot of scrutiny and suggestion of things that, you know, that other people thought were going on, and a lot of noise around the performance really, and as a result of that, I suppose there was a big effort to try and, you know, which we felt was a sort of positive discrimination, if you like, in an effort to do everything that was possible to level the playing fields. So I think that some of those things have certainly added pressure. But there's no doubt that the biggest pressure just comes from the team itself, you know, rather than from anyone else. It's, you know, the sailors are the and the support staff are the ones who are doing everything they possibly can to win. And yeah, of course they want to be able to deliver medals for their family, for the, you know, for the lottery ticket buying public, for their sponsors. But most of all, they want to win, because that's what's inside them, you know, and that's where they get their drive. And this, it's really the same for me, you know. Pressure is the majority of pressure is pressure I put on myself to try and make sure that everybody in the team is doing everything they possibly can to make sure that we give the sailors the best opportunity of delivering the performance of their lives.
What's been the high point for you? What's been the top performance for you personally?
I think it's difficult to pull out individual performances. I think that Nick Dempsey's silver was a great performance. You know, that the windsurfing is such an incredibly physical event. The training required is incredibly hard. Your body's always on the edge of breaking. And I think that people don't recognise how physically difficult that event is, and the specificity of the training required to be competitive for that. So I think that Nick did, you know, had to make a huge number of sacrifices and did well there. And Sujit, I think the other one I think that was excellent was, I think that Ian and Andrew's star performance was excellent. I think that in my view, they sailed the best regatta probably of their lives, albeit that the result doesn't reflect that. To be going into a medal race in that size of fleet with an 8-point lead against the quality of sailors that they were racing against was incredibly impressive, and therefore one of the highs but also one of the lows, because it was particularly disappointing that, you know, that they weren't able to just finish it off on that medal race. I think if they'd raced any other course any other day, it would have happened. But that was the course and that was the day, and we knew that was the story before we came in.
Was the Noth course an acceptable compromise for the sport?
I think it wasn't too bad today, but I think it depends on what you want the sport to be. I think the spectator experience and the addition of the fans, as it were, on the Noth has been delivered very well. I think the people that ran that Noth experience should be congratulated. It was a great day out for anybody that was up there. But in my view, in the main, the course area itself brought too much luck into the results. And my personal view is that Olympic gold medals should be about who is the most talented and the most skillful on the day, rather than who is the luckiest on the day. And their decisions that the sport has to make in terms of how much compromise it wants to make to bring spectators into the fold. But you know, we can't waste too much from a team management perspective. We can't waste too much time worrying about that. At the end of the day, they set the rules. You've got to decide whether you want to play or not. Once you've decided you want to play, you've got to get on with it and accept the territory. So we're not going to be whinging about it. But if it was me, I wouldn't have raced there.
And do you think that territory has now changed for good? That, I mean, this has been a turn point for the Olympics, hasn't it? With spectators.
Well, yeah. I mean, certainly we know. Well, I mean, we know from the bid book for Rio that you know they're already planning to have significant bleachers on, with bleacher sitting stands and on Gloria Beach there in Rio. So, yeah, it's likely that will be the case. It's an interesting medal race area that they've got there, which will be really close to the beach, can have quite a lot of current, and is in the majority of the prevailing conditions can have Sugarloaf Mountain and, you know, be in the wind shadow of Sugarloaf Mountain. So it's going to be tough in Rio anyway, because I think it'll be a light wind event. Will it be any tougher than here for the medal race course? But maybe not. I'll be surprised if the sport does anything else, because I think that when ISAF look at it and ISAF review it and discuss how the event went with the IOC, they'll be talking about the fact that of all the exit pools, sailing has delivered an incredibly high spectator appearance. That as a result of the medal racing and the better television coverage, that it's done very well on that front. And that's brought an extra dimension to the, you know, to the games itself. And I dare say that ISAF are probably also pretty happy that a number of other nations have managed to clinch medals on that course that might otherwise not have. And the results haven't been quite as predictable as they might have otherwise been. So from their perspective, that's probably quite a good thing.
Do you have any specific more specific thoughts about why the Australians did so well this time around?
I think that you know, they've focused. They've got five really good sailors in, you know, in the 49, the 470 men, and the laser, and those guys have put together incredibly good campaigns with their individual coaches, you know, they've managed to just get on with it. They've executed well. They've done very well here in this venue at all the previous test events. And they've built up that position of dominating in their classes, and so anybody else was going to have to go and take it away from them, I think.
Is there anything we can learn from that?
I think in some areas you can. Yeah, I mean, it's only you know, it's about trying to support where you think you've got extremely talented people. But I think we've been doing that anyway, and in those events that we've done that, we've delivered well. And you know, the 470 men won today, but could easily have gone the other way. You know, if Paul had been fit, then I think that he could have raced. So you know, there's a lot of what ifs. So it's not, and I think the margins are small, so it's not as if they've come in dominated across the range. They've come in with three boats in particular, and who were always doing well in their class, and they've managed to support them and deliver good results. So yeah,
it's familiar to hear people talk about home advantage in any sport.
Yeah.
Do you think it's been a home advantage this time, or do you think that this time, because of the amazing attention that sailing has gained, that it might have actually worked against us in some ways?
I don't think there's been a great deal of home advantage. I think there's been some areas that have been good. It's been set, you know, easier for us in terms of setting up infrastructure, you know, around and about the venue. That's been easier just because we're here more often. But having said that, you know, the visiting teams have done a cracking job at that as well. You know, the country as a whole has been great hosts. We've opened the doors, we've given people access, they've had as good access to the venues and to the waters as we have, and the majority of those top sailors have done as many sailing days as here as we have, many of them basing themselves in, you know, in Europe or even in Weymouth.
That's been to the disadvantage, then, is it?
Well, I don't think it's been to our disadvantage, but I think by comparison to other home teams, mm-hmm. where it was definitely to their advantage, we certainly didn't have that advantage. So I think it levelled the playing field, rather than gave, you know, as in the past, there certainly should have been a strong advantage in both Athens and in China for the home teams, and indeed in Sydney. And one of the things that we did particularly well was being able to, you know, almost become pseudo locals by the time that we spent there and the efforts we made to get involved in the culture and set up the infrastructure and spend a lot of time and effort there, understanding the people, understanding the water, maybe being comfortable there, and that did give us a good advantage. Where here it's particularly, you know, English speaking, the majority of countries are speaking English, there's less effort required. For all the European nations, it's easy to come. And from the ones that are further away, they've been able to come, set up base. It's been easy, it's been open. And so those advantages that were there for previous host nations weren't there for us this time. And I think also people just being particularly conscious to make sure that everything's being seen to be above board and not to give the Brits any advantage in any way, shape or form, when, you know, not that they necessarily would, but I think they just meant that the people were just particularly conscious of that.
So overall, do you feel more or less satisfied than Beijing and Athens?
I think that in terms of the programme we put together, I think we've had a better programme than for Beijing and Athens. I think in terms of the efforts for the sailors, coaches, support staff, I think they've put together a better programme. I think in terms of position we were in coming into the event. We've been in a stronger position than ever before. But at the end of the day, you know, in Beijing we walked away with 4 gold, so 6 medals overall. I said at the time, you know, I'd be surprised if anybody would reach that target again. You know, clearly nobody else has come close to this event. So yeah, you've got to say, well, Beijing was better in that regard. But you know what, I think that's just the nature of the changing mood of the sport. And as it continues to get more and more competitive, then that target becomes harder and harder to achieve. But that's sport, and that's what makes it competitive, that's what drives people on every day, and that's why it's so special to be able to win.
So do you feel more driven now at the end of the games than you did at the end of Beijing then, personally?
I feel more driven. I don't know whether I feel more driven. I'll probably have to come back to you on that one. I think you know, are there a whole pile of things that are, you know, do I have a clear idea in my head about what we'd like to do? Then yeah, probably. Mm-hmm. Will we be able to deliver all that? Well, I don't know. A lot of it's going to come down to money. But certainly, I am probably more confident than at the end of Beijing that we have got the sailors both within the system and within the pipeline to be able to maintain and field top fleet of medal competitive sailors in 2016.
Where do you stand on the RSX platforming thing?
Personally, I'd be with the windsurfers, primarily because I think that we've, you know, around the world we've got a huge junior and youth pathway of developing people for the sport. But again, it's not one to worry for us to worry too much about. It's what the rules do you want to play, and the kite surfing. I've got no doubt we'll be good at kite surfing. Britain's already got a women's world champion in course racing on the boards. We've already got people, you know, within our squads up and running it. We've got teams going to the European and World Championships. I know that I'm currently booked to go to the European and World Kiteboard Championships this year. The Worlds are in Sardinia, so that's obviously why I'm going there. And the Europeans are in Holland, I think. So we've got, you know, that will all happen. And I think that in 2 years' time, you'll probably find that the people who are, you know, 4 out of the top 5 kiteboarders will be ex-windsurfers. That's the changing nature of sport, isn't it?
Yeah, but I mean, the position of the RWA is that they're pushing, they voted for the RSX.
Yeah, the votes are public, aren't they? The votes are public in the domain, and the RWA did vote. Did vote for the RSX, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. If you had a blank sheet of paper, what would you do with the medal race?
I'd rather not have it.
we take into view of the position of sailing and where we need to go.
Yeah, I think that's the difficulty, really. The question is, where do you need to go? You know, I think on.
But it needs to be simpler, doesn't it? Because the medal races here have not been. There've been plenty of action, but they've not been simple. You've had to sit there with your spreadsheet going.
Yes, so it's not.
So that's not delivering from that point.
It's
of view,
not.
Is it?
Yeah, I mean, with
could you afford to go in with an elimination series and the top 10 sailors on equal points, whoever crosses the line first wins?
Well, of course, that's one. That's an option. But I think it depends on, you know, if you were in the ideal sailing conditions, then yes, you could. You know, so if you're sailing on guard at 2 o'clock in the afternoon on a summer's day, then yeah, you could, because the wind is relatively consistent. But if you're sailing in venues where there's a high degree of luck and randomness, that's where I have the problem with it. I don't really care what the format is, as long as we believe that the person that wins actually is the most skillful, most talented sailor that time, rather than the person who got the lucky gust or the lucky puff, yeah. or you know. That's because I just think that the amount of sacrifice that is made by athletes and support staff to get people to that deserves more than that. And if that is what it's going to be, then of course people will reconsider what they'll do, you know. People will just look to rock up last minute and chance their arm. And when you've only got one opportunity per country, per class, that brings a huge degree of risk for the country, not just in terms of its medal performances, but also if you look at it from a sport perspective, it brings a huge, because of the way the sport is funded in our country and the majority of other Olympic focused countries, where it's about delivering medal performances, top 10 performances, to maintain the ongoing funding for the four interim years. You've got to bring that down to a situation where there's a significant amount of luck in it. You're going to you spend a huge amount of time and effort, put together the best programs, and then bang, you don't win, and you go back home and find your funding for the next 4 years has been cut. And that, I think, is what makes it incredibly difficult, particularly when you're trying to build a successive program from below, which of course you need to do if you want to have sustained success over a number of years.
What's your future?
We're going to have an event with the team tonight, and then tomorrow we'll finish up packing up. We've got our nearest and dearest and sponsors function tomorrow night. We'll go to the closing ceremony on Sunday. Monday, I'll be very pleased to be home briefly to the sunny South Coast village of Titchfield, and then Tuesday we've got some meetings to do with sponsorship for the next cycle, then some activities, Cows Week, and then the Paralympic Games. So next focus is the Paralympic Games, and you know, and then looking at what's ahead, obviously.
Everyone seems to be thinking that you're moving on. Is that not correct?
I've got no current plans to move on.
Perfect. Well, pleased to hear it.
So,
contrary to
yeah, I mean, you know, I mean, obviously, just like yourselves, I'm sure you know, everyone's going to consider whatever offers come on the table. And after you've done another 4 years, it's obviously a time to have a little bit of time for reflection, isn't it? And that's something that, you know, I, like everyone else, as you guys know, you know, it's something I'm pretty passionate about, so I do put a lot of effort into it, and I don't often have time to put my head up and actually have a look around at those things for myself. So, plenty of people have been talking about lots of things, but we'll just have to see and wait how that goes. And in the meantime, I'm going to focus on trying to make sure we can deliver 3 medals from the Paralympics, and then work with our Y at least to make sure that the program's in good place for the next 4 years. And through that, I dare say, we'll come and have a discussion about where I'm going to sit in that or not.
But you would like to carry on?
Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, I'm not stood here thinking I desperately don't want to carry on.
Yeah, okay, good. I think that'd be good.
That's very kind of you to say something.
No, I agree.